Hey everyone, you're listening to the LFC Podcasting Couch, and this episode's brought to you by Pharmacy Mart, Fairfield, New South Wales. Now, if you mention this podcast to the team, you'll receive 20% off their entire vitamin and sports supplement range. That's Pharmacy Mart opposite the Fairfield train station. And if you want any more location details, head to pharmacymart.com.au. Now, let's get on with the show.
Lovely cushion header. Pacheco!
Hello and welcome to episode 98. The big 100 is rapidly approaching here on the LFC Podcasting Couch. It's Rich here, and I'm delighted to say that I've been joined with my good mate, Matty Lyon. Matty, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Rich. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. Really good. It's been a nice weekend. It's been an interesting weekend, by all accounts. Nice to see Liverpool Football Club back on the pitch.
Yeah, always good to see the boys back in action, even if it is in pre-season. Gives us a little bit of a taste of what's to come.
And talking of a taste of things to come, what have you thought of the pre-season? What have you made of the new signings and the way the lads are looking fitness-wise?
It all looks very positive to me. The players all seem to be in a good state of fitness. The conditions, particularly in Hong Kong, have been very hot for them all, and it's been a tough environment to play in. But they all look happy and committed. And certainly the pictures of the training sessions that I've seen, it looks as though the training's been very intense, very hard work. So similar to last season, I think we'll be in a position to hit the ground running as one of the fittest teams in the league, which is very encouraging. And we've seen glimpses of some of the new players, which have also been exciting. Salah looks like a great buy, very quick, good skill as well, and has already started scoring for us. And Solanke as well has scored a cracking goal in one of the recent friendlies. So it's all good. I've not seen anything to be discouraged about so far. I often wonder whether these pre-season tours are necessarily the best way to prepare for the new season. But since everyone does it, I don't think it puts us at any disadvantage.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think there's an argument to be had here, isn't there, about whether this does any good or not, and whether this is a right move or whether we purely do it for commercial reasons. And I think it's safe to say there is clearly a commercial benefit to going abroad and taking the LFC brand, if you like, around. But I think it was interesting, Klopp made a comment that the stadium was filled, but it was filled because of the history of Liverpool Football Club and not because of the players that were on the pitch. And he hoped that the players on the pitch would do justice, if you like, to the players that had gone before that had kind of created this fan base. Is there a real benefit? I looked at the training sessions. I found this inside training stuff that LFC have been putting out. It's been absolutely fascinating to see what the players are going through pre-season, the training and the work that they're putting in. And what I found was fascinating was the amount of running. And surely if you're running in that kind of temperature, in that humidity, in those weather conditions, there has to be some kind of physical benefit. We see a lot of this, don't we, at Melwood. They've got heat suits to generate sort of playing football or running around in these kinds of temperatures. So there must be a physical benefit to going somewhere like Hong Kong, isn't there?
I'd have to leave the science behind it to you, Rich. the physical benefits. It certainly looks very tough in terms of the training because of the heat. There were pictures on Instagram of players pouring whole bottles of water over their heads, absolutely exhausted after running. Daniel Sturridge put an Instagram video up just commenting that he was done after a training session because it had been that intense. And so, yeah, I think in terms of the intensity and putting themselves through their paces to make sure that they're in the best possible shape for the new season, that is all good. But whether the... Possibly, I suppose, the weather being so hot, they'll be used to harsher conditions than those that they'll have to play in back in the Premier League. And so maybe that is of benefit. Maybe they will be able to respond better when they start the season again in August. So that's a possibility. But I think it would be foolish to think that is the reason why they are out there at the moment. As you quite rightly said, it's the commercial benefits that are driving these tours. Most managers whose teams go on these tours, whether it's in the Far East or America or wherever, usually bemoan the amount of travel involved and how it's not the best preparation for the new season. But obviously the tours have a benefit for the clubs. I assume that they make quite a lot of money out of them. And also they're important to give the local fans a chance to see their heroes, even if it is just in a pre-season friendly. The crowds in Hong Kong have been fantastic. Mm. You can see how much it means to them. There's been great noise and atmosphere in the stadiums for what are essentially friendly games. There are upsides and downsides to the tours. I'd be interested to see if one of the big six clubs, say, took the decision one summer to say, no, we're not going to do a tour this year. We're just going to base our pre-season solely in England and focus entirely on preparing for the new season and none of the commercial opportunities. And I wonder whether that would have a big difference in terms of how they would perform in the rest of the season. But I can't see that happening really in the foreseeable future.
No, I think the commercial side will always outweigh it. I mean, logic says if you look at athletes, for example, they'll go and they'll do high altitude training or they'll do training outside of the UK because of the benefits that it has. I was looking at the guys and just how much they were sweating out there. There's no way that they haven't lost weight while they've been out in Hong Kong. And I think that from coming from your time off and the time down, and let's face it, we saw Phil and Bob, those boys were partying hard whilst they're on their downtime. There's no doubts about that. Studgy was over in the States, I think, enjoying himself. So I think from that point of view, certainly if the case was that they wanted the guys to shed a few pounds and, you know, get rid of that, then this is an ideal opportunity to be able to do it. I think you're right with the travelling. I think it's interesting this season because we went to Australia, didn't we? Straight after, at the end of the season, literally, we finished the last game of the season, and then they flew off, went to Oz, came back, and then had some downtime, and they all went away. Now they've gone off to Hong Kong, and they're already back in the UK. They landed this morning. And got themselves settled in. I think they've got a couple of days off. And if I'm right, they go back to Melwood on Tuesday. Emre Can joins on Tuesday as well to continue with the rest of the team. And then I think they've got a short period of time. Then it's off over to Germany. And that's where Klopp's going to set the training camp up over in Germany. And they're going to spend some time out there working on more tactical formations and that kind of thing. So I think it's quite interesting that I think there is part of it is going to be a fitness thing, going out to somewhere where it's incredibly hot. If you can play 45 minutes in that kind of humidity, coming back and playing in Liverpool, in theory, and it's only a theory, but in theory should be a lot easier. And I guess probably we need to get the coach on to do a pod with Nish to talk about the benefits and the ins and outs of it in a little bit more detail. But definitely the financial side of it at the moment is interesting. It's good that you can kind of feel like we're getting back into some kind of normality. You know, we've had two games with Liverpool on the pitch, which has been nice. We've lifted a trophy, which is very nice. Arsenal fans have been moaning and cursing their team and their performance. I saw one of them that was moaning as why they'd travelled abroad and why they weren't staying at home. Basically, exactly the point that you'd made. And it's interesting, isn't it? I think if these tours go well, people are very quick to turn around and say, oh, it was a great idea. What a brilliant way to do a pre-season. If they go badly, then it was like, why have we done this? Why are we going over there? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? I think at the end of the day, the fitness guys must know what they're doing. And based on that, you'd have to be quite comfortable that there are significant reasons other than, you know, a chance for Klopp to wear a baker's hat at one point. I think he was doing some cooking or something. And these really, really weird videos that LFC are putting out of rock, scissor, paper, and can you make James Milner laugh?
Yeah, those have been a bit bizarre. I'm not sure that they're quite hitting the target. but it is great that fans in Australia and Hong Kong and around the world get to see the team. And it's heartening, I think, for all Liverpool supporters to see what massive support we have worldwide. I think that's a real positive for the club. And in order to foster that and continue that, it is essential that we do turn up and show our appreciation for the fans. And I go back to the comment you made earlier about Klopp saying that the fans are here because of what previous teams have done and achieved for Liverpool. And that's the message really to convey to the players. All this hero worship and adulation that they receive is based on the winning foundation of previous sides. And that's something that they should aspire to and will hopefully inspire them going forward. So, yeah, I think overall the pre-season tours are just an inevitable commercial responsibility, really, which does have its benefits for the club, even if it's not necessarily the best possible pre-season. There was an interview with Lallana after the Leicester game, and he said that once they go to Germany, apparently the commercial commitments are scaled back then, yes. So the focus will be greater on training and preparation. So hopefully that will mean that we're gearing up then properly for the new season. Klopp was keen to point out in his post-match interview as well that August is really only just around the corner, and that's quite frightening when you think about it, because there's still work to be done, both in terms of fitness and making sure that this team's ready for the new season.
Yeah, absolutely. So, having watched the games and heard the interviews and everything else, who stood out for you so far in the pre-season?
It's difficult to say that. I don't think there's been a star performer. I wouldn't want to single out a particular player. I've been pleased with how sharp a lot of the team already look. Coutinho in particular did really well to take his goal against Leicester. That was his typical kind of strike, beating players and making space for himself to shoot from outside the box. And that was brilliant to see him so focused and fit and ready. And the overall levels within the squad seemed good. It was great to see Henderson back as well. His passing range seems great. He said in interviews that he's not having to manage his foot problem anymore. And if we can keep him fit, I really think he's an integral part of the team and a very important element that we need to be successful going forward. So if he stays fit and these games improve his sharpness, then that would be my main high point really from them.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Mo Salah? He's obviously done two goals in two games, I think.
Yeah, he's been great. I've been impressed by both his speed and his touch. If I remember rightly, one of the goals he scored was a header, which wasn't what the kind of goal we'd necessarily expect him to score, but it was great to see him being able to do that. He's obviously a big threat, and the fact that we've still got Mane to come back as well. I've got a great deal of confidence now in our attack. We seem to have so many options, especially with Solanke coming back as well. Origi got himself on the score sheet, although it wouldn't surprise me if Origi jumps further down the pecking order now that we've got Solanke. He might get more opportunities.
Yeah, I think Solanke looks very much the real deal, and I think he's a very interesting prospect, and I think Klopp's been quite animated when he's talked about Solanke and praised the skills of the scouting team who came up with Solanke and basically put the option in front of him. I think you're right with Mo Salah. I think his pace just looks frightening. His speed around the pitch and his willingness to get back and defend as well, I think, has been noticeable. And bearing in mind, he hasn't really had a chance to bed in with the rest of the lads yet. So once he starts getting onto the same wavelength as, I think Coutinho set up the little chip into the box where Salah gets his head on it and scores in the Leicester game. And I think what was impressive there was it was his pace and awareness to see where that ball was going and just left everybody else for dead. to put it into the back of the net and was willing to stick his head in there as well and, you know, take a chance. I think that's something we maybe lacked last season a little bit. So I think that's a real positive. I think Solanke's been a real positive. Hendo, I agree 100%. His passing range looks really, really good. I thought it was interesting that we've changed continually at the back defensively during the preseason friendlies. And I know we don't read anything into this, and I'm not saying that we do, but I think we appeared to look better defensively against Leicester in the first half when we had Lovren and Matip at the back. I know Klopp's frustrated with the goal for Leicester. It was a complete mismatch against Milner for the header. But those are things that they need to learn and they've got to iron out. But what have you thought about defensively? Where's your head at with that? Is Virgil van Dijk still the player that we need to sign? Is that where we're at? Or do we think now that we've got the likes of Gomez, who seems to have done well in pre-season as well so far, seems to be doing okay. We've now got Robertson, who's been signed, probably just as well, because it looks like Millie's picked up a thigh strain during the first half of the Leicester game. What are your thoughts defensively?
I'm still concerned defensively, by contrast to the confidence about the attack. Looking at the pre-season games, especially the game against Leicester, that there were a few things that sprung out. The headed goal was disappointing, mainly because it was exactly the kind of goal that we always seem to concede last season. And obviously this is something that needs to be stamped out of Liverpool's game if they're going to be successful going forward. We need to be able to defend those types of crosses, and particularly be able to defend set pieces and corners so that we don't give away easy goals to the opposition like we did last season. The other concerns for me, I don't think Moreno has any future at Liverpool. That seems to be pretty clear on the transfer front as far as he's concerned. I know there were offers a few weeks ago, apparently, that were turned down, but there doesn't seem to have been any further movement there. I know it's only a pre-season friendly, but there was a chance where Vardy was through on goal and Moreno went in for a challenge. And Moreno literally flung himself through the air quite recklessly. I think if he'd made contact, it would have been a red card. But he just went flying through the air, missed Vardy by some distance. It was a completely pointless and reckless challenge. Luckily, I think it was Clavan and then Karius mopped up the danger. But it was an example of why Moreno's probably not going to be part of Klopp's plans in future. The other thing that caused me slight concern during the Leicester game was that Karius still doesn't look particularly confident to me. There were a few back passes from the defence that weren't particularly helpful to him and put him under a bit of pressure. But rather than just boot the ball upfield, he seemed determined to try and play the ball out of defence and passed it back to whoever was closest to him. And on a few occasions, that put them under immediate pressure. So I've seen quite a few mixed reviews about Karius's performance on Twitter. Obviously not the most reliable or necessarily analytical source of judgment. But I still have that concern that rather than do the simple things like clear the ball upfield. He seems determined, whether that order's coming from Klopp or whether that's just how he plays. I don't know. But I always think it's safer to clear the ball properly rather than be clever and skillful and play it out of defence when that might cause you more problems.
Yeah, I don't want to get too much into the keeper thing. I still think Mignolet is our number one keeper, whether people like that or not. I think he improved significantly towards the remainder of last season. And, you know, I've had conversations with Nads about it as well. And, you know, his attitude is that's great, but he's got to do it for a full season. And I think there's an argument that says you're right. You know, Mignolet has to be consistently good right the way through a season, and I think that's fair argument. but I certainly don't think at the moment that there's anyone putting enough pressure. I'd be interested to see Danny Ward get on there and see what he can do and see whether there is. But I think, actually, do you know what? The pressure probably isn't on the number one spot. I think it's on the number two spot. And I think it's about who's going to be our number two, whether it's going to be Danny Ward or whether it's going to be Karius. And I think that's where the real battle is going to lie. I thought what was amusing was at the awards ceremony when they were given the trophy that literally nobody seemed to want to lift, that Mignolet went to shake hands with the guy who was handing out the medals, and the guy basically just sideswiped him through and didn't shake his hand at all. But Mignolet even comes out and puts on his own Instagram and just says, "I was trying to be friendly. I guess it didn't work." And it just shows the humility that, you know, he knows what people are saying about him, is aware of the situation and what's going on around him, but he doesn't seem fazed by it, and he just seems to be going about his business, doing what he does. And I think that shows a real sign of maturity from him this time round.
Yeah, I'm not, as you know, I'm not a fan of Mignolet's. I would have been happier if we'd gone out and got a new keeper during the window. Klopp made clear pretty early that he was going to look at all three keepers during pre-season and then make a decision as to who his number one would be for the coming campaign. I had hoped that Karius would step up, and maybe he will. Maybe he'll be given that opportunity. I'm surprised that Ward hasn't been given a chance yet. I don't think he's played in any of the games so far. Since he was brought back from his loan spell and they refused to loan him out again, I'd be surprised if he doesn't get a chance at some point during preseason to show what he can do. But yeah, as I say, I don't think Mignolet is the answer for us, and I think he's had long enough to prove himself and hasn't done so over the years that he's with the club. But the one thing I will say about him, which you quite rightly pointed out, is I can't recall a single time when his attitude hasn't been spot on. Even when he was dropped for Karius last season, even though he hadn't done a lot wrong prior to that, he still took it in reasonably competitive good grace and was focused on moving forward and regaining the number one spot. And indeed, when he did, he had some kind words for Karius when he took over. So yeah, no complaints at all about Mignolet's attitude, and he showed with that Instagram post that he certainly has a sense of humour.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I don't disagree with you that we need a new keeper. I think on the bigger scale of things, and if we're looking at the bigger picture, is that really where we need to be strengthening at the moment? I'm not convinced that that's the answer. I think Mignolet becomes, and I've said this before, I think Mignolet becomes a better keeper when we sort out our defence. And I think that if he has a defence in front of him that he feels more confident and comfortable with, I think then he naturally increases his performance. A lot of the, if you look at the mistakes that he's made in actually that lead to a goal, as opposed to mistakes that have happened right in front of him, how many goals, you know, just seem to be sprung from within 6 yards and there's not really a whole heap he can do. It's not like he's fumbled it, or, you know, balls have just disappeared underneath him because he's gone over the top of them, or he's gone too late, or he's gone too early. It just tends to be that we look at it and go, what the hell was the defence doing there? Why haven't they cleared the second ball? Why is it always this second phase that ends up in the back of the net? And I think that will be very interesting. And I suppose the key to whether we sort our defence out is potentially whether we end up with Virgil van Dijk or not. And this is another saga that just seems to drag on. And you and I spoke about this before we started the pod, and I'm going to talk about it now. This transfer window, I was really, really looking forward to. I thought it was going to be a magical transfer window, full of excitement, loads of intrigue, different players that we're looking at. And it seems to have just turned into the Naby Keita and Virgil van Dijk show. And it's a real shame, because so many in the knows and ITKs have suddenly popped up from everywhere. And, you know, I've just been looking at the Twitter feed now, you know, and there's half of the ITKs saying that Naby Keita's signed. There's half of them saying that he hasn't. You know, the only thing that we have got that we can say for certain is that Virgil van Dijk's gone on strike. How do you feel about Liverpool potentially looking at a player who's decided to down tools and go on strike?
I don't know whether we should say that he's on strike. My understanding from what Southampton's manager has said is that he wants to leave, and therefore he's not 100% in terms of being able to be committed to Southampton, and so he's training on his own.
Sounds like a strike.
So he obviously wants to leave, but whether that will be to Liverpool or not, I don't know.
It's a strange one. I put in hashtag Saints FC to have a little nose to see what the other side was saying, because I wanted to see what the counter argument was up to it. And there was a lot of people that were doing the, you just need to let him rot in the reserves and he can stay there and he's not going anywhere and he should, you know, stick to his contract, etc., etc. There were some others turning around saying it's a disgrace because apparently the proceeds to the game was going to the Grenfell charity. And so they were sort of saying, oh, you know, he doesn't want to play for that. Let that sink in for a minute, which I thought was a little harsh. We seem to have heard this and seen this game played out before. And it's difficult, isn't it? Because I don't want to slate the guy for saying that he's not 100% and he doesn't feel that he wants to play. I think he's got a valid argument that turns around and says Liverpool were willing to pay you a groundbreaking, record-breaking amount of money for a defender, and still you've turned it down. So it's hard for Southampton to play the we've been hard done by on this, because they've been offered a significant amount of money and they could have taken that money and spent it and, you know, maybe strengthened other areas of the pitch. So I can kind of see this from both angles. I think it's interesting, isn't it? Sky are reporting it, which is why I feel mildly comfortable talking about it rather than it coming from an in-the-know source on Twitter. But it's, like you say, the question is whether he has stopped playing football or whether the manager, and it sounds to me as if the manager has turned around and said, if you don't want to stay at the club, then go and train on your own. I only want players here that are prepared to, you know, who want to be at the club. Well, if that's the case, then surely it's time for them to turn around and go, look, this is stupid. He doesn't want to be here. We can't just have him training on his own for an entire season. We're going to move him on. And if you look at the signings that have been done, I think we're hearing that there's a defender heading off to City. Chelsea have got their defenders in and they seem quite happy. So where else does he go exactly other than Liverpool? And surely there's a point here where people just need to sit around the table and go, look, let's just get this sorted out for the benefit of both sides. And whether that means that we agree to buy him and Southampton and Liverpool keep quiet about it for another couple of weeks so that Southampton can spend their money without going, oh, they've got 60 million from Liverpool, let's whack another 10 on any player that they want. If that's what it needs, that's what it needs. But surely there's an argument now just to put this saga to bed and get it done.
It doesn't always work that way, though. I remember a few years ago when we were in the same position ourselves in relation to Suarez. Suarez apparently wanted to leave and was sent to train on his own. And in the end, he stayed for another year and he gave his all for the club and all was forgiven. And we were really pleased to have him for another year because he performed so brilliantly and gave 100% in every game going forward. So the fact that he may be trying to push a move doesn't necessarily mean that it will happen. The most depressing thing for me about all this is that I don't understand why we seem and it's not just this one transfer. We seem to be involved in these massively protracted deals. The Keita thing as well seems to be dragging on for weeks and weeks. Without any resolution. Whereas other clubs, you hear, oh, they're going to sign someone, and then it seems to get done, and it seems to happen. And there doesn't seem to be this soap opera saga in relation to the players. So I just wonder whether this is just unfortunate, or whether we the club should really be looking at how it does its business and whether there's a better way to go about it, so that we get things done quicker and out of the spotlight and without the kind of controversy that has led to this whole Van Dijk saga.
Yeah, I think I listen to the Anfield Rap a lot, and they did a podcast a couple of weeks back where they were talking about, and they spoke to agents and they spoke to a journalist and a few others. And they made a few really interesting points in there, which was, I think the thing is, if you look at the, okay, so if we look at the Robertson deal, that's gone through pretty quietly, pretty smoothly, no major dramas, everyone's a winner, and it's all done and dusted. Now, that kind of signing is a different level altogether.
Absolutely.
Compared to trying to sign Naby Keita. In the same way as the reason that the Van Dijk thing is difficult is because Southampton are sick and tired, quite frankly, of Liverpool going in and taking their players. And I can get that. I understand why they would be frustrated about that. So I think with these two in particular, I think the problem is that you've got one club in Red Bull Leipzig that don't need to spend the money. Don't need the money, rather, to go out and then spend it. And so therefore they're trying to change their perception, I guess, in the same way as Liverpool a couple of seasons back were trying to stand firm in the transfer market and saying, look, every time Liverpool are interested, suddenly the price goes up 10 million just because it's Liverpool Football Club and we're not going to be mugged off by agents and we're going to stand our ground. So I think there's an element of that with Red Bull Leipzig, where they're turning around saying, hang on a minute, we've got Champions League, we're doing really well, we don't need your money, so actually, screw you, we're not going to do it. Interesting that Naby Keita apparently has changed his Facebook image that used to be of him and in the Red Bull Leipzig kit. Now it's showing his international picture on there. The latest meltdown in the last hour is that he's started following a few players on Instagram that just happened to include Liverpool players. Although add to that, he's also following Pogba. So maybe he's off to Man United, who knows?
My response to that, though, is that why are the deals for Van Dijk and Keita, say, why are they any more difficult than Arsenal signing Lacazette or Chelsea signing Morata or City signing Walker from Tottenham? That they're all incredibly expensive deals for very important key players, with the exception possibly of Walker. So why do those deals get done relatively quickly and quietly without controversy, and yet week after week we're embroiled in these seemingly interminable negotiations? And don't get me wrong, I totally agree that I think it's absurd when people say, oh, just pay them another 10 million or just pay them this or that to get it done. You obviously want to get the best possible price and the best possible value, because that impinges on what are the transfers you're able to do that summer. It affects your relationships with other clubs when you go back to do business and your ability to get good deals in future windows. But there has to be a way of doing things that is better than, I'd say, these long drawn out negotiations that seem to be plaguing us at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. And there is something different going on, and I don't confess to know what that would be or why it is. I think we always knew it would be harder this season purely because you've got a scenario whereby, you know, the shop that we are trying to purchase in has a different set of rules to it, and I think it's quite complex. And I think that in itself causes problems. But I don't know is the honest answer. I don't know why Chelsea and alike seem to get things done and we don't. I always felt that the Naby Keita deal was going to be difficult because clearly Red Bull are trying to dig their heels in. In the same way, I think that we had this with, was it Konoplyanka two or three seasons ago, where we had a similar situation where they were just really difficult to deal with, and for whatever reason we don't seem to have worked out how this game works and how we play it. But it just seems crazy that we're getting these figures coming out. know, Sky Sports News are saying that apparently a senior figure, at Red Bull Leipzig today has told Sky Sports News Naby Keita will 100% not be sold this summer.
Yeah. And then there's other people on Twitter saying that a deal has already been agreed and that Keita is going to be a Liverpool player. And I have to say that the information that seems most convincing to me is that that he's unlikely to be sold during this window. It seems a bizarre position because I think the negotiating strength seems to be on the basis that apparently he has some release clause in his contract that only becomes active next summer.
Yeah,
which would be for I think it's 48 million.
Correct.
And so I'm sure that the logic behind our move is that, well, if we offer them a substantial amount above that, then they'll be tempted to take the money rather than lose him for certain for a much lower amount the following summer. But for whatever reason, that logic doesn't seem to be prevailing, and we don't seem to be making progress. Just a change of a topic, but kind of linked to the way we do business in relation to players. I'm also alarmed by the fact that we have Emre Can going into the last year of his deal, and he still hasn't signed a new contract. And again, there were rumours a few weeks ago that he was going to sign as soon as he came back to Melwood, and then there's rumours again today linking him with Juventus. Chan's a very good player. He's not necessarily a certain starter, but he's a young player that we would like to. From a future Liverpool. Turns me that we've allowed the situation to arise where he's going into the last year of his deal without having signed, and yet everyone at the club seems to be particularly relaxed about this. But again, that seems to me to be a poor way of dealing with a player's position. What do you think about that, Rich?
The fact that Liverpool Football Club seem to be so relaxed about it makes me think that there's not an issue with Emre Can. And I guess the argument that he's still under contract, so therefore he's not going anywhere anyway, is kind of the only thing that makes me feel a little more relaxed about Emre Can. And again, I think this is where this whole ITK thing, you know, we hear so many varying rumours, and, you know, I think the latest one that is it Juventus are coming in with a ridiculous offer for him and this, that and the other. And you kind of look at it and think, well, no one seems to be stressing. This is the thing. No one seems to be stressing at Liverpool Football Club. And this is what, in a way, makes me feel that there isn't too much to be seen here, and actually what's happening is that people are trying to generate a story where there isn't one. In the same way as I think with the rumours coming out of Felipe Coutinho and Barcelona, look, that's not going to happen this year, but this is how they start the process. They'll sow the seed this year, they'll give it another year, and then they'll start pushing and trying to make a bid. And I think that's quite interesting. So I think with the Emre Can situation, look, he's going to come back off of his holidays. He's going to come back in. I'm sure they will sit down and talk with Jurgen. And this week will be a very interesting week, I think, for LFC. I think Emre Can, we will find out a lot more one way or the other. He'll have had his holidays. He'll have had time to think about it. He can come back and talk with Klopp. I think the one thing that we do have is that they all seem to be happy to talk with Jurgen, have those kind of conversations, find out what's going on, and then they're happy to move forward from there. And I think that's the important part of this, that he seems to be able to have those kinds of conversations and get this done. But look, you know, if Emre Can's big thing is about playing time, that seems to be his key motivator. It's not about money, it's about time on the pitch. Fine. We need to ask ourselves the question, is he going to get that time on the pitch? Because, you know, if we sign Naby Keita,
that's up to him, though, in my opinion. If he has faith in his ability and he believes he is a world-class midfielder who should walk into any team in the world, then he should have faith in his own ability and his ability to move himself in front of the other midfield options that we have. I still think it's bad practice to allow a player to go to enter into the last year of his deal without having signed a new contract. If you look at the position with Barkley at Everton, they said to him, if you don't sign by the end of the season, then that's it, you'll be sold. It seems to me that if Chan wanted to now, we could be in a difficult position. If Juventus have made a bid of, I think it was £31 million, which you would say is well below his value in the current market, particularly given the prices this summer. But that's the danger when you go into the last year of your contract, because the club have faced the decision then of, well, do we accept this offer, which vastly undervalues the player, or do we risk him leaving for absolutely nothing in the following summer? And that's unfortunately the position we're in. Having said all that, it wouldn't surprise me if Chan does sign a deal this week. Sometimes I think stories come out on the basis that they have some credibility before the player is signed, and the stories a few weeks ago were all saying that it was basically done and that he would sign when he came back to Melwood, which is only this week. So hopefully we'll get some good news on that front. But it does worry me that the position may be an indication that we're not doing things necessarily the best possible way.
No, I agree. And I think this is, if we look at the Naby Keita thing, the one thing that makes me wonder, we hear all this, is not for sale. If that's absolutely the case, why the hell are Liverpool still putting in bids for? There must be something going on that says he's not for sale. However, you know, if you put a bid in, or if you do this or you do that, then, you know, there's something there. Liverpool, historically, if we've been told there's nothing to see here and there's no point doing it, we tend to just walk away and go, sorry, guys, it didn't happen. So there must be something behind it. In the same way with the Virgil van Dijk thing, you know, we've come out and made this really bizarre public statement that we're not interested, we're not going to pursue anymore, we apologise, blah, blah, blah. So what, we now wait for Southampton to approach us? Is that how this works? Again, that seems a little bit weird. The Emre Can thing, again, just the sheer fact that we don't seem to be stressing about it, for me, is a massive source of comfort. And I think you're absolutely right. I think he signs this week. I think we get it done and it's over the line and everybody pushes on. And in the same way as with Felipe Coutinho, you know, we've heard the rumours coming out about Barcelona. And I think this is the thing that they do. And this is what they did with Suarez. They got into Suarez's head. And if you remember, basically Liverpool turn around and say, give us one more season. This is what we want you to do. Give us one more season. And then, you know, if Barcelona are still interested and we haven't done A, B or C and you still want to go, then fine. You kind of get the feeling that's pretty much what's happening here. So, you know, apparently Phil and Jürgen have sat and talked about it. They've had a conversation. Jürgen's words were, we've been together for 8 days. Of course, we've had a chat about it. And he's more than happy at Liverpool. I think that must be the argument here, that maybe they've turned around and said, look, you can go there if you want, but this is a World Cup season. You play every week for us. You know you're our key player. You know that you stand where you stand with us, and you know you are a superstar amongst our team. If you go over to Barcelona, are you going to be guaranteed to play every game? You know, give us another year and see where we're at. So I think this season, I'm not worried about Felipe Coutinho going anywhere. Next season, I may be a little bit more twitchy. But I just don't see the need for concern or to hit the panic button. But I genuinely think, and I put a tweet out about this, you know, the LFC fan base, or certain elements, should I say, not everybody, but certain elements of the LFC fan base are keep going into this complete meltdown every time there's news that comes out. And the truth in all of this is that none of this is coming from the club. This is coming from people who apparently have sources, or who know someone, or, you know, maybe there are sources and this is getting out. But there's no way that there are this many people who are getting linked into what's going on. So they're reading between the lines. They're looking at different stories. They're making assumptions. They're taking a chance in certain areas and just thinking, do you know what? We'll give this a shot and see what comes out. We're all getting wound up and we're all getting in a state about rumors that are coming out. And they're being caused by ourselves. This isn't coming from LFC. This isn't coming from Naby Keita. This isn't coming from Virgil van Dijk. This is just people that are putting stuff out there. So why are we getting so worked up about it? Just purely because there's this hunger for information and news. It will get done when it gets done. Emre Can will sign when he signs. And, you know, this constant bombardment to a point where, I don't know about you, I've stopped going onto Twitter and I avoid it other than talking to a few friends that I've got on there and chatting with a few people. I just can't keep scrolling through it other than when I come on the pod, because I know we're going to talk about it, because people will tune into this podcast to hear what you think about the rumours, what I think about the rumours, what Nish is saying. You know, we're all hungry for it. But the truth of the matter is, until they lean, there's nothing to see here, is there? Yeah.
And I totally agree with you. I don't ignore Twitter. I still look, but there's so much conflicting information. People claiming to have sources, and one account will say Keita deal is done. Another account will say it's not going to happen. And I don't think you can get too invested in any of that. I don't care how many bids we've made for Keita or Van Dijk or whatever. All I care about is, as you said, whether they eventually lean, whether they eventually become Liverpool players. And then if they do, great. If they don't, then hopefully we'll find someone else who may turn out to be even better. I'm not overly concerned about the Coutinho situation. Coutinho seems like a decent guy with a level head. And it wouldn't surprise me if he'd be happy to bide his time and give us another year or two before maybe seeking a further move. And I still think he has a significant way to go in terms of his development before he reaches the world-class level of a player like Suarez or Neymar. My only concern is that there's the talk recently that PSG are going to put in a huge bid for Neymar, triggering his release clause, which is apparently something absurd, like 196 million or something like that. And if they were to stump up that kind of cash, and Barcelona were then suddenly flush, then they could go to Liverpool and say, here's 100 million for Coutinho. And if they were to do that, and if they were to get to those kinds of figures, I do wonder whether FSG would say, well, that's a good deal, and we should take that money. I don't think that would necessarily be the right thing to do, because given the struggles that we've had in getting other players through the door, it would be difficult to get a suitable replacement of the same quality, if not impossible to do that. But it does worry me that the powers that be, if the money became too tempting, might actually say, do you know what, we'll take a chance. This is a gamble worth following on.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we talk about, you know, we're moaning because Red Bull Leipzig are saying, you know, Keita's not available for any price and blah, blah, blah. And yet we're saying exactly the same about Felipe. Yeah. Is there no price that we would sell him? I don't know. I think there is an argument, and I'm going to get hated for saying this. I know I am, but I'm going to say it anyway. There are times in the season occasionally where Felipe goes missing.
Yeah.
And I think we've talked about this in other pods that you and I have done. So if they turn around and said, we'll give you 140, 150 million for Felipe Coutinho, there has to be an argument that says that you would want to turn around and seriously consider accepting that kind of figure for a player like Coutinho. I mean, the figures that are being mentioned at the moment are ridiculous. They're preparing a 70-odd million pound deal for him. Really, off you trot. Not, that's, you know, ridiculous kinds of money. They've already had Suarez on an absolute steal. What the hell makes them think they're going to get Coutinho? It would be interesting to see whether the conversation would be, I tell you what, if you want Felipe Coutinho, we'll have Luis Suarez back.
Yeah. And there was that question was raised in a Facebook fan group that I'm a part of. And again, opinions were mixed. Personally, I think Suarez is a much better player. than Coutinho. Obviously, he's a bit older, but I would take that deal all day long. I also think that if Barca went to 100 million, that would probably be enough for FSG. That would be my guess. But it'll be interesting. The most likely outcome, I would suspect, is exactly what you've said, that this is the softening blow, if you like, for a proper bid come the end of the season, when if Coutinho continues to perform as he has done, Barcelona will look to get him then. But the Neymar situation is possibly the key, I think, to all of this.
I think this is often the case with transfers, isn't it? And I mean, this again, this could be what's holding up Naby Keita's deal. How do we know that Red Bull Leipzig aren't trying to line up a replacement for him? And they're finding that negotiation difficult, and so that holds up. So many times we hear about it being, it's almost like purchasing a house, isn't it? There's more than one person in the chain. And, you know, in the same way as, you know, if we were going for Virgil van Dijk, then Southampton don't really want to make that public because they don't want to have to pay through the nose for every other player that they try and buy. Sorry. And exactly the same with Naby Keita. You know, there's always going to be people that are impacted by what's going on. And it's how that works out throughout the whole business, how that chain all comes together and how it links in. And I think transfers are massively complicated, and it's not just as easy as, you know, chuck some money here, chuck some money there. I guess at the end of the day, we will have to wait and see what happens. I think this week is a very interesting week. The week after, I think we start the Audi Cup. Is that a week's time, I think? 1st of August, I think, is the first game. So that's probably a week or so away.
It's actually before that, I think.
Is it?
Because I am going to Berlin next Saturday.
Check you out.
On Saturday, we play Hertha Berlin. So I think that's the first game of that tournament, unless I'm confusing it with some other preseason friendlies that we've got lined up. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Should be. I've never been to Berlin before, so that should be great. And should be a great day out for the Liverpool fans over there.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just checking to have a look now. LFC face FC Bayern in the Audi Cup on the 1st of August at the Allianz.
All right, maybe the Berlin game is...
So I think the Hertha Berlin's just a pre-season, another little friendly that we're chucking in before we start that tournament.
Yep.
Maybe Jürgen's decided to add that to the schedule.
Yeah, quite possibly. It all helps. I'm sure they won't be saving players for the Audi Cup, though. We should get to see some good action on Saturday.
No, absolutely. And I think Jürgen sort of said that when we come to the Audi Cup, the plan was that for the first part of the pre-season, everyone gets a half. And then once you've gone past that, then you start to extend it. And we saw that in the second game that we played against Leicester. It's hard to call it a final. The second game against Leicester, where some players sort of had 40 minutes.
Every trophy counts. So
we'll take it. I've no issues with that at all. But
that's what I say.
Yeah, the more the merrier. Start of things to come, we hope. But I think absolutely, you know, he then started saying, right, okay, so they're going to play 45 minutes and then actually we're going to give them another 10-15 in the second half as well. So we'll start to increase the time. And certainly the indications from Jürgen was as we get into the Audi Cup, so we will start to see more of a first team lineup, if you like, and we'll start to see the main players starting to get more and more game time. More time under their belts. Daniel Sturridge, by the way, is looking incredibly fit and healthy. Long may that continue.
I was just about to say that. That's brilliant news for the club. If he can stay fit and be a big goal threat for us, then that's a massive added dimension to our attack.
Absolutely. And I think this is where life gets interesting, isn't it? Because we are at a point where, were the transfer window to shut tomorrow, are we stronger now than we were last season?
Yes.
I agree as well. I think we are just, even though we haven't really added much, but we've got a proper left back. Okay. No, I know he's not a player that we're all going to go into town over because it's a great signing, but it's a steady signing. And what it means is that we don't have to run Milner into the ground and we can work between the pair of them, which I think is a real positive for us. I think Joe Gomez is starting to show that he's getting back to where we want him to be. That's a real bonus as well. I think with more pace now, The other big news, sorry, just going off on a tangent. Did you hear about the African Cup of Nations?
Yeah, that it's been moved to the summer.
What a result.
Yeah, that's a big bonus for us.
Huge bonus for us. Such good news for us. Sorry, that just doesn't seem to have got mentioned much, and for us, certainly with our players, that's an amazing turn of fortune, that is. But yeah, so I think that's, you know, we've added that strength now. Sturridge looks fitter and better as well, and I know we're hedging our bets on him staying fit, and I know we shouldn't. But we are better now than we were before, and to be fair, we were only slightly worse than a couple of other clubs in the league. So, you know, that has to be a good statement. I suppose the next statement is, if we were to purchase Naby Keita and Virgil van Dijk, how big a difference does that potentially make to our squad? And is that the difference between being potential top four and title challengers?
Yeah, I think it does. If we can get those two players, or not necessarily even those two players, two players of their caliber, then I suspect that will jump us from being top four contenders to being contenders to win the league. Just because it gives us the added solidity. Personally, even with those players, we would fall a little bit short, would be my suspicion, mainly because I don't think we have a goalkeeper who's of sufficient quality based on what we've seen so far to win the league. Yeah, it would definitely be a massive jump for us. As we are, I'd still say that we're strong contenders for the top four, but probably not for much more than that.
Which is more important, Van Dijk or Keita?
I'd say Van Dijk.
Yeah.
We have a strong midfield already. If assuming we secure Chan's future, I still think there's more to come from him. There's a lot of dynamism and pace in the midfield. And if we keep Henderson fit as well, then it's not an area of great concern. Whereas I think at the back, although I personally believe that Lovren is a far better player than he gets credit for.
Agreed.
He is still prone to the odd, potentially costly error. And a towering presence like Van Dijk at the back would make a big difference to our defence, and would probably help us eradicate the problems that we've had in terms of defending set pieces and the like. So yeah, I'd say Van Dijk or an equivalent defender is the greater need.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think if we were only able to get one across the line, I think I want Virgil van Dijk over and above Naby Keita. The last one that doesn't seem to be going away, although it seems to be bubbling away quietly in the background, is this tenuous link with Mbappe.
Yeah, I've heard that mentioned again over the last few days.
It's yeah.
Bubbled up again.
Thoughts?
Mbappe seems to be the most sought after striking talent in world football. Potentially the most valuable young asset that a club could have at the moment. If I was Mbappe or Mbappe's agent, I would be surprised if Liverpool, unfortunately, and much as it pains me and hurts me to say this, I would be surprised if Liverpool was at the top of the list in terms of contenders for his signature. There's a host of clubs, I'm sure, would love to take him. And although we can see the sense in him coming to us because he would be given an opportunity to grow and develop under a brilliant manager like Jurgen Klopp and then go on to greater things, the instincts in football these days seem to be to go as big, as fast as possible. And so it would surprise me if we were able to land Mbappe. I think that would be a massive coup. And a brilliant thing for the football club, but the most likely destination is elsewhere.
Funny that we said pretty much exactly the same thing about Virgil van Dijk, and yet we became his number one choice. We didn't think that Naby Keita would want to come to us, and it appears that he probably chooses us over Bayern at the moment. There seems to be a...
but neither of those players have signed.
No, and you're absolutely right. But this is the thing, isn't it? I don't think it's that the players aren't willing to sign. I think it's that the clubs aren't willing to let them go, which probably says why they are the kind of players that we really want to be signing, because, you know, when other clubs don't want to let them go, then that tends to suggest that that we're potentially the kind of club that that maybe that we have got this thing. And I think Jurgen Klopp does tend to be that X factor that makes players sort of look at us and go, well, actually, do you know what? I'd quite like to learn under that. I met one of our pod followers, actually, a guy called Mark, who's at Mark Anello on Twitter, whilst I was at work, amusingly, this week. And we were chatting about Jurgen Klopp and the draw and everything that he has. I think he's such a crucial player in everything that goes on in Liverpool Football Club at the moment. And just the fact that he seems remarkably calm, remarkably blasé almost about what's going on in the transfer window. He's aware of what's happening with Neymar. He's aware of the conversations with Coutinho, etc. He even joked about the Robertson signing once it had finally been made public, and he turned around to the journalist and said, oh yeah, sorry, I said I'd call you straight away, didn't I? It must have happened late at night and I didn't want to disturb you. He just seems so relaxed about it. It just makes me think that, actually, do you know what? Maybe we all need to stop worrying about this and just kind of move on. And I think it's a real shame. This has been we've been talking for an hour now. And the reality is we've spent most of our time talking about potential signings and where it's going. And the truth of the matter is you haven't got a Scooby-Doo and neither have I. Neither of us know what the hell's going on. We can only second guess and read between the lines. I suppose the difference between us and the ITKs is we don't put it out on Twitter as facts or put it out there for debate, and we just talk about it on the pods. But I am so desperate just to get back to some football, and let's just talk about what's going on the pitch. And actually, do you know what? I just love the transfer window to shut. Do you think there's an argument, and we'll finish on this point, but do you think there's an argument that says actually the transfer window should shut as soon as the season begins?
Yeah, I'd be totally in favour of that. I don't really understand the reasoning behind when the window opens and closes. It would be better for the clubs, and I'm sure the clubs would welcome it if that the window were to shut before the season starts. Don't get too downhearted though, Rich. That's what I'd say. Don't let all the speculation and the frustration bother you. The key things and the positive things that have come out of our discussion are that we are in a better position than we were this time last year, both in terms of the players that we've got having improved over the course of last season. Players like Lallana have made incredible strides forward under Klopp's management. And we have quality additions to the side. Salah looks a fantastic signing. Solanke has tons of potential. And Robertson will strengthen a key area that we were lacking in last season. So I don't think there's a great deal of reason for pessimism. There's still time for these deals to get done or for other deals to get done. And so people should just relax, let the club get on with doing its business, and hopefully they'll do well and we'll start the season even stronger.
Absolutely. And I think that's the message. And we keep pushing it out and saying it to people, just stay positive, you know. There's always a chance. Football is always changing. There's always different things happening, you know, and there's little bits that change here and there, conversations that take place, people that just get to a point and think, oh, sod it, let's just get this done and let's get it over the line. You know, let's not use what's happening at the moment to be a stick to beat people over the head with and call for FSG out and all this kind of stuff. At the end of the day, the club will do its best. There's no way that they try deliberately not to sign players but want to be linked with them just for the hell of it. Let's be happy that we are in that shop window at the moment, that we are looking at these players, that we are still in the race for it. But it would just be nice to focus on a little bit of football for a while, because I think, you know, if nothing else, these pre-season friendlies have told us that we've got a lot of talent at the club. The guys are looking really fit. I thought they looked way more fitter than Leicester City. I think Leicester really started to struggle into the second half. I thought our benches looked really strong. You know, and that's one thing that maybe we suffered with last season, was that we didn't have players to bring on and make the difference.
But we've just got to keep the faith here and just believe that everyone's pulling in the right direction. And, you know, like we keep saying, our boss clearly isn't that worried about it because he was quite happy sitting in Ibiza with an umbrella on his head.
Yeah, and Klopp made a very good point last season that our fans would do well to remember, which is that you can't place too much importance on the signing of one player. You can't spend all your money on one guy. And he said this about Pogba, because if you spend that amount of money and the player gets injured in the first game, then where is your investment? You have to look at the team as a whole and what you're trying to do together and move forward with that in mind and add and strengthen where you can. But I don't think people should be too concerned if we miss out on the odd target. There are other players out there. We'll get them. We'll move forward and we'll be stronger in the new season. So let's look forward to the campaign kicking off again.
Absolutely. And it could always be worse. We could be Arsenal fans looking at having just been beaten 3-0 by Chelsea and absolutely slating our team for it and wondering why we've still got a manager in place that we really don't want. So life is always full of positives. And one big positive is that I got to spend just over an hour with you, mate.
Oh, thanks, Rich.
Shame that the rest of the bros couldn't shout out, obviously, to Nadzi. Hopefully we'll get him on a pod too. Nish should be waking up soon, so we'll be able to catch up with him. And hopefully we'll get Benji on as well. We keep trying to drag him onto a pod, so we'll get that sorted out in the future. Keep an eye open for what's happening on the LFC podcasting couch. Obviously, we're getting close to the 100 mark, and I'm sure that we'll do something special for that. Next one up is episode 99. Keep your eyes open for that. And we will look forward to catching up with you all again real soon. Thanks a lot for listening.
Lovely cushion header. Pajero!